This will be 202. Tonight I'm going to talk about things that are bad, but usable, and sort of the nature of popularity and use of music as sort of a crutch on things. First things first, it's bad, but can I use it? Sometimes I watch stuff obsessively. Certain things I just, I know that maybe the thing I'm watching isn't perfect, but there are bits and pieces that I find interesting. Ideas or themes or characters, behaviors, scenes. There's a lot more of this, I think, that kind of colors my ultimate final critique on most things. It never gets an A+. It never gets a 5 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5 usually, but a lot of my 3 out of 5 rating stuff is stuff that's not really all that great, but there are things I like in it. Just scenes or moments that I find have almost a educational value for me as a person trying to write and develop ideas myself. The real problem with this is that you kind of only have so much time to figure out what's good, what's worth watching, what's worth examining. And so it's tough to tell someone, oh yeah, invest 90 minutes in this. It's got about 15 minutes that are good. And that's just sort of the truth. But at the same time, someone that's so, I don't know, hypercritical of everything, such that if it's not perfect, it's not worthy. That's sort of useless too, or not useful to me. I mean, once more, we're getting back to the idea of what makes something valid criticism. If it's, superficial things, I mean, they're valid. If they're as valid as they are, you know, a superficial criticism of something is still a valid criticism, but it is a superficial criticism. You know, if you don't like a show or a character or something because of a haircut, that's as meaningful as it is. I think some of those sorts of things sometimes can be what it comes down to, but ultimately that can't be the crux of the criticism. You know, you can't, well, I didn't like that show because the guy had a bad haircut that pissed me off. It's like, well, what about what was happening in the show? What about the action or the activity or the conflict or the ideas or the theme or the style or any of those other things? You know, there is this hierarchy of importance where, you know, for me, looking at some of those things, some of those components is all I'm really going for. So I don't care if a show or a movie is necessarily praised as high art or even praised as being good. It's still something I can look at and learn from, even if it's not doing something correct. You can learn a lot from things, from mistakes, from other people's mistakes, maybe, than you can from just looking at something that's just a spot-on success. Sometimes that can be both overwhelming and ultimately kind of fatalistic and frustrating if you really think about, well, all these things came together and it just happened that this worked in this movie or something. Yeah. So that kind of leads into, you know, this idea of me sometimes liking things that are considered bad or that everyone else hates. It leads into the idea of me not liking things that everyone else seems to love. And by everyone else, I mean everyone else. No, I mean, you know, if it's sort of whichever way the critical pendulum swings in terms of, oh, well, everybody seems to really dig this or everybody seems to really dig that. And sometimes I just don't get it. And I wonder how much of what people like in a public forum, you know, something like the internet, where there is a sense of anonymity, but there's also the sense of community and it's very much so a sense of sort of subcultures and people trying to want to belong, want to agree, but also want to disagree. There's, I mean, it goes both ways, but I wonder how much of this sort of hate or love thing, once again, is more of a public opinion and posturing. I mean, really, that's the question, I guess. Can I be a kid as an adult? Can I get away with liking things that I shouldn't like? Or what should I like? What shouldn't I like? There's stuff that's just utter crap. That doesn't have any real value, I guess. There's stuff that you couldn't even look at from a technical standpoint as a learning tool for a creative person. Is it okay to like things that other people don't like And at the same time, what is it all about when you don't like something that everybody else does love? And what are you really looking at? Case in point, Observe and Report, the comedy that came out. Jody Hill directed, written. I like a lot of their stuff. I like Foot Fist Away. I thought it was pretty funny. I thought it was all right. You know, it is what it is. I like Eastbound and Down. It's good. I mean, it's sort of, it's funny. It's these kind of reprehensible, farcical characters in a farcical kind of world. And my main criticism of something like Observe and Report is that it trying to ride this sort of narrative line between being sort of a dark comedy in a real world with a delusional character, and then towards the end it completely gives up on that. And that seems like lazy writing to me. It seems problematic. And that's why I didn't like it. People are like, well, it's just a comedy. It's funny. Blah, blah, blah. You know, this is hilarious. This is challenging an audience's expectations as to what is acceptable to laugh at. You know, okay, fine. That's one element of it. But it's also just genre combining, not even necessarily genre combining, but tonally combining in ways that are inconsistent and to a degree incoherent. I mean, you do a movie where the first two-thirds of it are, for the most part, a real world with an artificial character. Not an artificial character, maybe, but a character that's delusional, a character that's got problems. And he's got problems, and he's got delusion, because the world is ostensibly a real world, where, you know, there are consequences for actions, and people, you know, behave a certain way. And then, as the story progresses, you see this character sort of being changed by the interactions that are happening, but towards the end it just sort of goes in this nihilistic baby with the bathwater kind of like farcical angle that is completely inconsistent with the first two-thirds in terms of the world they've created. And that was something like that to me is me giving legitimate criticism for why I did not like the movie. Now you can just say, oh well, it's funny is. And it's like, okay, fine. Well, then why are some things not okay to do that? And other things are. It's almost like there's this cult of public opinion and pretentious angle to certain things. Like, oh, well, this show, it's okay to laugh at. But this show, no, it's passé. The internet gods of coolness have decided that this isn't funny, but this is. It just seems like such a waste of time to get involved in that. If you have a legitimate argument for why you think something is funny, and you can put it, or why you think something is good, then that's what the value of these sorts of discussions and these sorts of reviews are. But if it just sort of falls into a humdrum, you know, play it by how you feel at the moment thing, then it's very frustrating and ultimately kind of useless, you know, where it's like, well, people don't like... Well, okay, yesterday I was talking to a couple of my friends about Sam Raimi. There's a huge cult of people that are big Sam Raimi fans, right? You know, they love those Evil Dead movies, Army of Darkness, all that stuff. I honestly don't mind it, but I don't love it. But at the same time, I get what he's doing, and, you know, it's all well and good. Then he did the Spider-Man movies, and then he did the third Spider-Man movie. And the third Spider-Man movie has got all kinds of things that are totally bizarre and strange, but clearly are referential to those earlier Raimi works. There's a bizarro dance number and the way the characters are speaking and behaving. And, you know, comes out and it's just, you know, panned by the internet. This is terrible. This is awful. Look at emo Peter Parker. It's a bad movie. Now, some people don't use those elements of criticism. They use more legitimate ones, which I'll give you. Like, you know, too many villains, that the story was drawn too thin and not as organized and structured. And you know what? It was a somewhat less structured film. It felt more like a series of issues of a comic book rather than one arc necessarily. And you know, Venom was certainly wasted. I'll give you all that. Those are legitimate reasons to dislike that movie. Any of those reasons that I stated earlier are not if you're the kind of person that likes other Sam Raimi works, especially if you're the kind of person that likes something like Drag Me to Hell, which just came out. If you like Drag Me to Hell because of all that bizarre stuff, but you don't like Spider-Man 3 because of all that bizarre stuff, I see sort of a logical inconsistency in your thinking. And that is really what I'm getting at by, well, why does everybody like this, but I don't? Why does everybody hate this, but I don't? What's the logic, you know? For me, ultimately, if the experience that it's trying to generate is satisfying to me, then I like it. You know, if what I think it's trying to do seems to work, then, you know, whether I like it or not, I can still give it credit as being accomplishing that. And I feel like something like Observe and Report was an aborted effort at a dark comedy sort of exploring this man-child delusional element, because by the time it gets to the end and it just turns into some consequence-free, you know, battle royale that ends in a shooting. I mean, yeah, that's shocking. Yeah, that's, oh my God, that's crazy, that's whatever. But it's all very cheap. It's all very shock value, superficial. It's easy stuff, you know, to just be sitting there in front of a typewriter, or, you know, if you're using a typewriter, no one uses a typewriter, in front of a laptop or in front of a big, massive computer with different things plugged into it. And you're coming up with your story and you're writing your story and you're moving along, and then you get into a big writer's block. And you're like, man, I don't know how to end this. Well, how about if I just have a naked guy run around and then he shoots him, and then everybody gives him his job back and he doesn't go to jail, and then, you know, none of these things that would apply in the real world from the beginning of the story apply. Okay, and then that will just be something avant-garde? No, it isn't avant-garde. It isn't challenging. It's just bad writing. That's just all there is to it. You can't create what, I mean, you can't really do that. I mean, it's experimental, sure. You want to call it experimental? I'll give you a pass. You're not trying to tell whatever story you're not trying to. You can throw as many cop-outs out as you want. Often there are other things that people just clamor over and they love, and it's just inexplicable to me what's so great about some things. Sometimes it's like, that's a good movie, but what is really so great about it? And I don't know, I felt that way kind of about The Rustler, which is a movie I felt was good. It was well shot. It was, you know, in terms of what it was trying to do, the characters were interesting, and it was well acted. But it was also sort of a story that I felt had been done before. Not that you can fault something just because had been done before. It's been done before, but it's been done well and never quite this way. But at the same time, you know, it's not the best movie of the last 10 years, probably. I mean, and if so, really, why? And that's just, I mean, that's where I run into these inconsistencies. I'm trying to, like, kind of figure out the difference. And, you know, there's no accounting for taste. And ultimately, you kind of like something, and somebody else really likes something. And it's just, you know, life experience or who knows what. Especially with comedy, I guess. But when you're trying to really analyze whether something is good, is different, I think, than whether you like it. I think there's definitely, for me, that's the kind of key, is that, is this good or... or do I just like it? Because I can tell something that's bad, but I still like it. I'll still laugh watching an episode of Robot Chicken. I still will sit through one of those and find things funny. But it's not considered good because it's considered, you know what, it's cheap, it's easy, right? It's, oh, let's take toys, play with nostalgia, and then put them in real-world situations, seemingly, or whatnot. You know, let's do Cops with Thundercat toys. Ha ha ha. You know, it's easy comedy, but, I mean, I don't know. I think it's fine and it's funny, but it's not good. How about, like, the new seasons of The Venture Brothers? I haven't seen season 4 yet, but season 3. Season 3 of The Venture Brothers, and even season 2 to a degree, they've gotten way more complicated with their storytelling and way crazy and out there, and I love that. That makes it good. To me, that is good. But it's not as funny as it used to be. And that's sort of the truth also. It's like, I love that I don't know what the hell is really going to happen in this show, and that it's becoming something totally different, but it's less funny, and that's sort of too bad. And you know what? That can be hit or miss, too. I mean, sometimes you watch something a second time and you find it funnier. I mean, that's really what I'm getting at, is this. People, I think critics sometimes seem to get in their head, oh, I like this, that makes it good. And I think the real thing there is, no, it doesn't make it good just because you like it. Because you can like certain things. You can like, you know, certain music. And if there's an awesome action sequence, because it's got awesome music that you like, you know, if you like Wire Foo all over the place and Linkin Park, then you're going to love some Wire Foo, Linkin Park fraught, gun kata action moments. That doesn't mean that movie's awesome, if it's got that. And that's where I'm, you know, kind of segueing finally into my music as a crutch bit that I'm going to do. And this is going to be the close, I imagine, of these single-serving podcasts with, you know, playing on an idea. There's some stuff, I think, honestly, where it's just about music. You know, some sequences in a movie or some moments. I mean, the training montage. Let's take the training montage as a go-to thing. Rocky IV training montage has 2.5 songs in it and is essentially two separate training montages. That music is ridiculous, but there's something kind of awesome about it too. And that, I mean, is the music a crutch? Is that training montage just as cool without the music? No, music is definitely a crutch. I'm talking about score. I'm talking about song use. The end of Fight Club, Where's My Mind, you know? That is perfect. It complements it, but it's also, you know, it colors it. One thing where I found music being used as a major crutch is for crutch. I have a crutch on some music crutches. The television show Rescue Me, I think, uses a musical intercutting montage of different characters in different states of angst, anxiety, and emotional suffering just about at the end of every single episode of that show, and sometimes at the beginning too. Sometimes at the beginning are more of these action sequences of, you know, and it becomes this like crutch where it's like you're just trying to info dump that all these people are miserable, and you're coloring the emotion by using a song, which is using, you know, sonics and acoustics to affect our emotions. You know, it gets into the brain and it does what it does. And I mean, it can be well used, but damn, it can be overwrought and it can be overwhelming. The scores in just about every single romantic comedy are just nauseating. Just something like What Women Want with Mel Gibson, or You've Got Mail or something. I mean, it's terrible. It's so obvious. It's so ham-fistedly just like do-do-do-do-do-do-do and na-na-na-na. You know, it's like, here's the saccharine part. Here's the kind of funny, dopey part. Here's the, like, serious emotional part. I mean, they come up with these, like, varying themes, which they do in all scores. I mean, you've got James Horner, like, Alien score. I mean, that's overblown and awesome, but that's what that is. That's just, boom, it's awesome. You've got Star Trek II, you've got Glory, which is a really good score. Very saccharine and emotional kind of stuff. It's just rough if you're too aware of the score, then that's kind of a problem usually. That's what they say, you know? You shouldn't be too aware of the score. The score should kind of sit there and color and tonally help with things. I mean, the score for The Dark Knight apparently had 4 people on it, or the last 2 Batman movies have had like multiple people doing the score, which to me seems weird because the scores are very simplistic and almost minimal. They're good for those movies though. And then you've got something where, you know, you've got song use. You've got something like a movie like Heat, which is one of my favorite movies, and the use of that soundtrack is just crazy awesome, with this sort of mid-90s semi-electronic kind of before the turn of the millennium, what kind of weird stuff are we listening to now? Is Brian Eno and Passengers and all kinds of other strange stuff on that. And that works really well. That helps the movie. It is overwhelming in places, but for that kind of style, it works. I don't know. Like I said, it's me saying this is something I like doesn't necessarily make it okay or make it good. I just think it's something that people need to be aware of a lot of times is, you know, do you like the song? Do you not like the song? And is that really a major problem in the movie? I mean, like, are you going to dislike Casino Royale because you hate the Chris Cornell song at the beginning? Like, that song is terrible, but the movie's awesome. It's like, okay, there you go. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really all I'm getting at. It's just this idea that I'm going to try to make full disclosure on. I've talked about what I like and what I don't like and my feelings about nostalgia and my feelings about hate and love and my feelings about other people liking things and me not liking them and kind of my rationale for a legitimate bit of criticism dealing with themes and ideas and what the project and what the piece is trying to do versus, you know, the things I just like and so I like those. And so I'm going to try in these next, you know, as the Futile podcast continues, which it will, I'm going to strive to be completely honest about if something is good or if something is just something I like. And I will argue with other people about the pros and cons of things in a real sense, and try to get anyone else that I have on the podcast to think about things in that way as well, to cop to, well, they just like it, but they know it's not good. I think it's a hard thing for someone's ego to do sometimes, to say, I love this, this is awesome, but I know that it's not great, and I'm not the guy that only likes the stuff that's actually awesome, and it hates everything properly when it's shit. Because people that have spot-on great senses of review can like stuff that's not considered that great by a large number of other people. It just, it can happen. But the logic of what it is and what you like and why you like it and whether it works for what it's trying to do is super critical. And if nothing else, that's the thing that people need to think about when they think about critique. Not about, oh man, I want to make sure that I hate the right stuff and that I love the right stuff. No. Like what you like and dislike what you dislike, but be aware that your own biases exist within that, and don't completely let those color whether or not something is good or bad. I want to strive for this sort of attempted objectivity in whether things are good or bad, while at the same time fully accepting the superficial and or subjective notion of an individual critic and an individual's critique. And that's my two cents on all that. Don't forget that you can send any emails to the Futile Podcast. It's futilepodcast@gmail.com. You can go to the website and direct download the episodes. graniteseed.com/futilepodcast. There's a www in front of that, I'm pretty sure. You can go to iTunes and search Futile Podcast. If you haven't got subscription going, you should get the subscription, because it's free and it's generally pretty short, and I try to take a different angle on things. I try to bring kind of the sum of all of the stuff I'm thinking about into any given topic. The kitchen sink is being thrown in more often than not with my take on stuff, and I'm not terribly concerned with the internet liking me. And I'm not terribly concerned with the internet disliking me, such that I'm not trying to craft some sort of a WCW, if they're even still around, some WWE villainy or heroism. It's really just, I want to talk about what makes something good and what makes something bad, and whether I like it and whether I don't like it. And I feel like that kind of criticism is the way to go. And that's just the way it's going to be on this podcast. We're not trying to win any hipster points, and we're not trying to hate on anybody, and we're not trying to curry the favor of the otaku shut-in video game audience or any of that. I'll throw references and stuff when I feel appropriate, and it's for me, and it's for those that enjoy them, and for those that don't, they can move on, they can do something else. Chances are there'll be a reference that they will enjoy at some point, not too soon after. So take it easy, and keep on listening, please. I appreciate it. Thank you.